keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you feeling them flares. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch the scenario on stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah, just nod your head with it. So explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it. No scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool. Hear my heartbeat beat into the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so. No overdose, cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know. We getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in, full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursuing.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio once again with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV. Thank you guys for tuning in and welcome to the show. We got a bunch of stuff to cover today and all kinds of different topics that we're going to go over. We're going to have a special guest on the show tonight, Derek Bros from the Houston Freethinkers and the Conscious Resistance Network. He's going to talk about some various news stories that we've been covering and also his new book that's coming out called The Conscious Resistance, which is being co-written with one of our other journalists that works with us, John G. Vibes, as well. Now, I'm also joined on the call with my co-host, DB Schwartz. How are you doing tonight, man? Oh, DB had a problem with his connection there. But I am joined by Manny. How's it going, Manny?
What's up, Nick? I think maybe DB froze up or something down in Minnesota, you know. But, yeah, I just want to say this in Spanish. Saludos a todos nuestros amigos allá en Acapulco, en el estado de Guerrero, en México. Y todos, espero que todo esté bien. Also wanted to ask you a question. Why did PM Beer's court date go to March 11? What was up with that?
Yeah, you know, I'm not really sure. As far as I know, it was some kind of just a delay in the court. I'm not exactly sure what went on there. But yeah, that's something that we should mention because we had Patty on recently to talk about what went on. But her court date was pushed back from the 23rd of February, which was going to be this coming Monday. And it's been pushed back to March 11th. So anybody that's planning on going to Fullerton to support PM Beers in the Fullerton 14 in court, make sure that you keep, you know, take note of that. And also make sure you guys check out UCY, the channel that you're listening to right now, that you're listening to us on. They have shows every day of the week. And we're here on UCY 5 days a week as well. I think we got DB Schwartz back on the call. How's it going, man?
Doing good, Nick. Doing good. Sorry, I had a little connection issue or whatever.
No big deal. I haven't even talked to you about your weather out there. I probably don't want to bring it up, but I know the Northeast is dealing with some horrible weather out there. Just snowstorm after snowstorm, and there was like a bunch of people's houses that were, you know, roofs that are collapsing in Massachusetts, and, you know, it's crazy.
Well, yeah, they're getting hit, a lot of people, and this is a kind of a pre-segue, but there's some people saying this is a weather warfare right now, this massive East Coast polar storm hitting them in retaliation for the Ukraine stuff. So, you know, the big three all have the weather tech.
Yeah, you know, it's funny that you say that because we're actually going to have Derek Bros on later in the show, and he's going to talk about that stuff. So, I mean,
it's negative 11 here, by the way, Nick.
Oh man, like, you know, I'm sorry to hear that, because I've never in my life experienced temperatures like that. I went to Utah one time to go snowboarding, but it wasn't that bad. It was like 30 something degrees.
It brings out the inner Viking in you, or you just go to a different part of the area country, I guess.
well, fortunately, I'm not in that weather anyway. I want to give a quick shout out to the Pontiac Tribune. They did an article today about 10 media outlets that people should be watching as far as who to go to kind of break through the propaganda machine. We talked about this on our last show a lot, because you know, propaganda is one of the things that really gets people to do a lot of dumb things. You know, the Nazis were propagated, and look what they did to the Jews, and now the Jews are being propagandized. Look what they're doing to the Palestinians. Americans are being propagandized. Look what we're doing to people in the Middle East. I mean, so, you know, it's really important that we break through this stuff. But they put together an article today about 10 media outlets, and we were on the list to watch, you know, and so that was pretty cool. The Intercept was also on there, a few other awesome websites like Storm Clouds Gathering. And so I just wanted to give a quick shout out to the Pontiac Tribune for that. You know, there's so much news going on, and I mean, I don't know exactly what the biggest story is right now, but you know, one thing is that there's just this ongoing, you know, police statism that we always talk about. But today there was an article on the Anti-Media by Justin King that kind of talked about a little known aspect of what's been going on with the police. And it's the fact that these cops are a lot of times getting caught doing horrible things to children. You know, I mean, we're talking about like pedophile, child molesting, you know, and there's been like 10 stories in the past 7 days of cops that are getting caught or prosecuted or charged for these types of crimes. And that's just something that it's just sickening. You know what I mean? I mean, these are the same guys that wear that badge on the side of their car that says to protect and serve, and they're violating the most, you know, innocent. And it's very much like to me, it's so similar to the whole, you know, the thing with the Catholic Church, how they were finding out that a bunch of those men in the Catholic Church were molesting children and stuff. It's a very similar prospect. These are people that are supposed to have, you know, the trust of the people. They're supposed to be protecting people, not taking advantage of the most innocent. You know, and so this is a whole other side of this, and it leads back to what we continuously talk about here, about, you know, who we're letting become cops, you know, and how is there not a rigorous process, and how in the hell was there a court case that ruled that they can literally be prejudiced against cops that are too smart? They can literally not hire cops because they're too smart.
They, you know, can, it's fire, like, they can fire cops also, Nick, for not responding in the appropriate manner of their training, which right now is brutality, because it's the training. They can't get in trouble for the department's training standards. So it's really up to us, the citizenry, and up to us to really, you know, we have to establish a citizens' accountability commission of some sort and govern the way that police are trained and really all public servants are trained.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we need to have a higher standard, especially for the people that are supposed to be working within the government. And, you know, I mean, back in the day when a long time ago, you know, people didn't work in the government to make money. They did it because they were supposedly trying to help things. I know that hasn't really turned out the way it was designed. But, you know, I was reading this biography about John Adams, and you know, there's very few presidents that are actually pretty good presidents, and maybe it's because it was his biography and stuff, but I was reading it about John Adams, and, you know, John Adams is pretty good. That's one of the reasons why you don't hear much about certain presidents, is because they're actually pretty decent. They weren't, like, expanding governments. They weren't starting wars. They weren't taking away civil liberties and stuff like that. Those are the guys that you don't hear about. You know what I mean? And so, you know, reading his book, and keep in mind he was the second president of the U.S., And also keep in mind that George Washington is the one that initiated the crackdown of the Whiskey Rebellion. And they went in and started forcing these guys to pay taxes on their whiskey. And then when these guys didn't want to pay tax, they sent the troops in. Keep in mind that was George Washington, the first president. John Adams comes in and he kind of he undid all that stuff that Washington did. He repealed the whiskey tax. He freed all the people that were in jail because of the Whiskey Rebellion. But reading his book, you can kind of tell that he thought of this profession, working for the government, as a very noble one, you know, and as something basically it's more or less like a volunteer type of job. And unfortunately, that doesn't seem to be what it is anymore. Now it's this huge greed-based, corrupting profession. Anybody that works for the government has the possibility to be subject to this bureaucracy, which breeds all these horrible things. And I think that's really where the problem really stems from. And then you have these rules that are in place that just keep on continuously perpetuating these same flaws. You know, just like they want to hire cops that aren't that smart, just like they don't screen them very well, you know, and they end up with a bunch of these brute cops that are doing really dumb things. And you can't help but assume that they're doing it on purpose. You know what I mean? Because these are the people that are passing these policies and stuff like that. You know, so I mean, it almost seems like that's what they're doing on purpose. And that's where we gotta really, I think, combat this stuff is, you know, at the very root cause of it. And then the other thing that we always talk about is the disarming of the police. But of course, that doesn't help us with this story.
Yeah, we don't, you know, we always used to say this, Nick, but we really don't want to disarm them, because if they get disarmed, we'll get disarmed. So that's not the issue. The issue is always going to come back to who are the people behind the badge. And then secondarily, like, if they're going to be using lethal force all the time, there has to be a cam on of theirs. We need to have a point of view of why they reacted the way they did. Otherwise, if the cam's off for whatever reason, they have to just not be allowed to have basically the union protect them. They have to be a private citizen when that cam's off for whatever reason.
Yeah, there's got to be more accountability on you know, every aspect of this stuff. And it's kind of sad that the very root, you know, the very, like, even the way they hire people is completely flawed. You know, it just tells you how far gone this thing is. It's a system that we're going to have to, like, work really hard to either scrap and rebuild or try to reform. I don't know. It's a tough topic to tackle because it's so big. But I do have Jaime Lopez in the studio tonight, and as probably a lot of you guys know, he's one of our new team members. But he's been working really hard to get this newsletter off the ground, and we just wanted to go over the newsletter a little bit before Derek joins us. He's going to join us in a few minutes. But I wanted to bring Jaime on just to explain, you know, what's going on with the newsletter, where can people sign up, and how can we connect better with our listeners and our fans.
Well, we're getting this going just to kind of get everybody out there a voice, a chance to give us an opinion of how you guys want anti-media to develop. We're really excited over here. As you know, we've been planning a lot of stuff for our audience, and we really want to engage with them and give them product and content that they want. You know, our main philosophy here at the Anti-Media is that we want to share news for the people, by the people, you know, and it's all about going anti-established corporate media. So our newsletter covers basically our news week of news. We hope that we have enough audience to increase it to daily if anyone chooses to. We're all still in testing stages, so that means that we're trying to figure out what the niche is, what the want is out there. So we read all the emails. Everybody at the Anti-Media gets most of the emails. So we, even though we don't reply all the time, we always have some. We try to get to everybody and hear everybody's concern. It's interesting. We like it. We know where we're headed. So please keep on. We have the link is theantimedia.org/newsletter. I'll be reading the comments there and moderating them. And we also will be giving out Newsweeks weekly. So I think I'm kind of
excited.
Yeah,
so we're starting weekly, then we work up to daily. Keep an eye for, like, I don't know, activism. You know, we're going to use it as like a Paul Revere type of system where if there's anything like a call to action, you know, if there's any big big action that we need to take, we need to, like, we'll send it out to you guys in the newsletter, and so everybody can get it, like, directly to their inbox, and we don't have to deal with any kind of censorship.
You know, actually, something exciting that's coming up here at the headquarters for Anti-Media, we're having our first staff meeting, and we're actually going to have a few journalists here, and we kind of want to get that going to see what our next step. We know we have a lot of people out there that are passionate about what we write. We have such a diverse way of thinking here, and so it's nice to be able to share that with everybody. We're thrilled. We're looking forward to hearing everybody out and entertaining you guys more with our radio shows.
And improving. Improving.
Yeah, we're always getting better, man. A couple months ago, you were at 500,000, you know?
Yeah.
Likes on Facebook. And to think you just came back from one.
That was a few weeks ago.
Yeah, yeah, sorry, my bad. It works. It feels like we've been here forever.
Yeah, so, you know, Jaime's going to be reading the chat room as well, and we're going to be... If anyone has questions, if you don't feel like calling in, you want to talk to us in the chat, we're going to be reading that live on the show too, if anybody wants to have their input. And so, you know, that's basically it. We're doing some things that, you know, we're trying to improve our what we're doing. And
if you guys don't want the newsletter, you guys want any other alternative news source, just let us know what you guys want. You know, we're also working on future video production here, so it's cool new things we have coming. Make sure to check us all out and stay loyal. You know, we have really good news. Today's reads were awesome. We have awesome journalists working for us, and that's kind of going to be fun of the newsletter too. We're going to be exposing each one of our journalists so you guys can meet them and know what they're all about. You know, we all have different stances. We may not all agree on everything, but as a whole, we believe there's alternative news. You know, we don't need to rely on the corporate. We need to be fed, you know, allegedly, quote unquote.
Of course. And, that's why I'm so happy about that article on Pontiac Tribune today, because it's really about, like, you know, supporting independent media and countering the narrative, because if no one's countering the narrative, then we're going to have propaganda, we're going to have a bunch of wars. And
did they already release that video for the interview?
Not yet. But our next story here that we're going to talk about.
Can I make a comment?
Yeah, go ahead.
I just want to make a comment that to have a good newsletter, I also like to comment that, you know, activists or true hardcore activists need to be involved in the input also, not just journalists and stuff. And then down the road, hopefully it'll become, you know, in Spanish also, because you're right by the border, obviously, and stuff like that. So I just want to make sure that I said that, okay? Thank you.
Yeah, man, for sure. Thanks for the input. And we would love to have a Spanish show in the works. If anybody out there wants to... is interested in helping us with that.
Manny, alguien allá afuera que quiera dar las noticias. Aquí tenemos a habla hispanas.
Hey, Nick, Manny, I know we've talked about it before as well, as far as maybe you thinking about helping us with the show too, and that's definitely still on the table.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's something we can work on, Manny. Just give us a link so I can get a hold of you. Or anyone have any ideas, you know, suggestions. We take them all.
We got to get Manny a female co-host.
You got it, BB. You know that, huh?
Now, Hamoto.
So we got this other story here that's pretty big, and to me, it's probably one of the biggest. Is what's going on in Ukraine? Now, we know there've been some ceasefire talks, and they did sign a, you know, ceasefire deal. There's still fighting going on. There's been some crazy, huge explosions going on over there. Me and DB were talking about that before the show. A lot of people were looking at that because it was a huge mushroom cloud, and they're like, man, that almost looks like a nuclear explosion. Other people that we talked to thought it was one of those mother of all bomb type of conventional bombs, but it was huge. I mean, enormous. And the shockwave that came out from it and it like blew the glass out of the windows and stuff from, you know, miles away. It was pretty scary. It was pretty scary stuff. Now,
yeah, it probably was a Moab. Just looking at it from different angles, if it was Nuke, it would have been basically an EMP and knocked the camera out, at least if it was a digital cam. You know, the only way they could have got footage on that if it was a Nuke would have been with like an old school VHS cam, you know, researching into it. So that most likely 95% was a mother of all bombs. But that pretty much means that they're using extremely advanced artillery, or they're actually a fighter is dropping that, which means it's probably stealth because nobody saw any fighter. So that's some crazy stuff. If they're using like a B-2 or something over there to try to hit ammunitions depots and stuff with MOABs, that's crazy.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing that was pretty notable about that explosion is that it wasn't really covered at all in the corporate media. So that's kind of one of the telltale signs that it was probably on behalf of the Western Ukrainian people. Because keep in mind, if the Ukrainian rebels had dropped that bomb, then it would have been front page news. You know what I'm saying? So we got to keep that in mind. There's a chance that it was a Western backed type of maybe a NATO supplied bomb. I mean, who knows? There's no telling. But what we do know is that there's a somewhat of a peace deal going on. People are still getting shot and getting, you know, dying by the masses over in Ukraine. And we got to keep in mind that it's a proxy war. I saw an article that came out the other day, and it was from, I forget what news source it was, but they were quoting the Jen Psaki, which is the State Department spokeswoman. But she was basically saying, yeah, we don't want this to turn into a proxy war over there and stuff. You know, and it's kind of, to me, it's kind of, they're already basically saying, yeah, like, we acknowledge this is becoming a proxy war. And that's something that we've been saying for a while. And that's why it's so sad and it's so unfortunate that this is going on, because it's the Ukrainian people dying and it's a bunch of foreign resources going in, whether it's from Russia or whether it's from NATO or the U.S., whatever.
And the numbers are staggering, Nick. I mean, they're enormous. It's already over 50,000 from independent accounts. They said 5,000, but, you know, I've been watching some interesting footage from an anti-terrorism like kind of conference that took place in Syria, and they said just based on satellite imagery that they have, it's 50,000 already. Who knows how many people inside buildings and stuff they can't even see. And they're talking about mass graves they're seeing with like 5,000 people in them. This is a kind of a genocide going on, and it's kind of being swept under the rug like it's a civil war, but it's really not. Like, whole towns are being wiped out.
Yeah, man, it's a total proxy war, and it's not a war that's being fought with resources from the people that are there. And it's something that I guess everybody that is supplying, anybody that's part of NATO, anybody that's a member of that organization, which makes, you know, a lot of the countries in Europe, a lot of the taxpayers in Europe, a lot of the taxpayers in the U.S. that all pay into that system, kind of had blood on their hands, because our money is funneling into the proxy war in Ukraine and in Syria, you know. And so it's on us as citizens to figure out ways to defund those these types of foreign policy moves that these guys are doing that are, you know, killing a bunch of people. And that's basically all there is to it, because without the citizens of the world, and we got to include the people that are Russian and all the people that are European, it's on all of those people and all of us here in the U.S. to reel in our own foreign policy and our own, you know, wars, proxy wars, global wars, war on terrorism, that are going on. Otherwise, we're kind of guilty by default, because we're all paying into this stuff. Everybody eventually has to go to a store. Everybody pays taxes one way or another. And we're all kind of guilty by association. And so if you're not fighting to stop this stuff, then you're kind of complicit in it. You know what I'm saying? Now, we do have Derek Bros on the line from the Conscious Resistance, the Houston Freethinkers. He's a journalist. He works with Ben Swan. He works with us at the Anti-Media, a bunch of other awesome outlets. and all kinds of other projects. We're bringing Derek on to talk about some of the stuff that he's been working on, and it's kind of hard to get you on the show, so we want to kind of cover a lot of the stuff you've been working on maybe for the past few months. Anyway, how's it going, Derek?
What's happening, brother?
Oh, man, we're just getting through some of this news stuff. We got through the police state already, and I know you got some ideas again to talk about that as well. And, you know, we're talking about this foreign policy stuff and how the citizens of all these countries that are members of organizations that are funding these proxy wars have to really stand up to these you know, monolithic issues. And, you know, we can't really, in my opinion, we can't really try to vote our way out of it anymore. We got to take direct action by defunding it or, you know, some other way of physically stopping this stuff from happening, because just voting for supposedly progressive politicians like Barack Obama or, for instance, a supposed anti-war candidate, which could be possibly Rand Paul. I mean, voting for these guys obviously doesn't really change anything. You know, and so I think for us, especially now in 2015, 2014, everybody started realizing, okay, yeah, a lot of stuff is wrong. There's a huge police state. Everybody in the country knows there's a police state and that the police have become militarized. But I think 2015 is like all about solutions. And I think that's one of the big things about your book, The Conscious Resistance, is that it's a lot of it is about solutions. So I think that's the first thing we should talk about is your book. And if you want to let us know what the book is about, how people can find it, how they can help you out.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Thanks for giving me a chance to talk about this. So the book is called The Conscious Resistance, Reflections on Anarchy and Spirituality, and it's being written by me and John Vibes, who also writes for the Anti-Media Free Thought Project and a bunch of other awesome websites. And our book is basically aimed at bringing to groups of people, two sides of what we think is a solution, one of many solutions towards creating a better world. And basically that is moving people towards the direction of anarchy, of self-governance, of building community, specifically of agorism, which is anarchy in action, which is creating the solutions. Like you were just saying, you know, we can't vote our way out of these institutions, out of these problems, but instead we can look at our own lives and see the problems that we're facing and figure out which ways our individual actions are contributing to supporting those industries, whether that's government or corporations. You don't want to support industries you don't want to support. And in removing yourself, you know, divesting from those institutions, whether that means avoiding taxes in various forms, using alternative currencies, getting off the Federal Reserve note, things like that. So removing yourself from the system so that you're not physically supporting it, but and doing those things in the physical world, and recognizing everyone else's ability to have self-governance, to pursue their own method of freedom and of organizing and association. And at the same time, coupling that message with a message of spiritual healing, of, you know, understanding meditation of a variety of forms. But really just the idea behind the conscious resistance is that we can not only pursue to fight tyranny and these various ills that we see in the world, in the physical world, but I believe, and I think John would agree with this, that the physical manifestations of the problems we're seeing in the world are actually, you know, can be connected to deeper issues within all of us, that us as individuals, we all have our own doubts, fears, insecurities, et cetera, things that mess with us and keep us from being a fully realized human being, somebody that is balanced and able to have compassion and to have self-love and to care about others around them and things like this, and to have a really balanced perspective. We each have things that keep us from doing that in various ways. And our idea, our thesis here is that if we focus on working on those issues as individuals, again, the anarchy principle that starts with the individual, in the same sense, this change, this internal change from within has to come on the individual level. So we're saying that if we as individuals choose to pursue self-governance and we choose to know ourselves in a deeper sense, then we might find ourselves on the path to maybe a new level of freedom that we've never even thought was possible. And also, you know, that we think that any revolution without healing on the individual level is a recipe for disaster, because we can educate ourselves about all kinds of political issues and, you know, the problems we want to fix in the world. But if we only, you know, we could even defeat the current government, let's say, and, you know, abolish this idea of the state and create some new free world and people have various forms of governance, et cetera, and life could be better. But we believe that until we deal with those deeper issues that we all have, we would only get past the government in the physical sense, only conquer those problems in the physical sense, and ultimately would end up creating many of the same problems again. You know, not to say that we can create a utopia, but we can definitely create a world where this systemic abuse and corruption and violence against various classes of people and, institutionalized monopolies on our lives by various institutions and individuals, where that doesn't have to exist. And we can do this because each individual recognizes and respects the other individual's right to pursue a free life.
Yeah, man, that's why I'm so excited about this book too, is because it aligns so much with the message that we put out here on the Anti-Media Radio on a weekly basis. Is primarily what you were first talking about is, you know, self-government, governance, you know, and decentralization. To me, that's probably the most important aspect of any future social movement or revolution. But, you know, one thing that we always talk about here is the skeptical, you know, being skeptical of revolutions, because if you look back, you know, especially, you know, look at the example of the Arab Spring and all the revolutions that have gone on over there. Egypt has seen, what, 3 revolutions now. And as you were saying, you can depose one government and say, okay, yeah, we're going to get rid of the king, we're going to hang the king, and we're going to replace him with Napoleon. You know what I'm saying? And these are the revolutions that typically throughout history have repeated themselves. The U.S., you know, we got rid of the king and we replaced it with a virtual monarchy, especially if you look now what it's devolved into, and you see the Bush family dynasty and the Clinton family dynasty. I mean, it literally is becoming a monarchy. But, you know, I think you're definitely right, because a lot of these countries that go through these revolutions, and if you look back at the history of almost every country in the world, they've all gone through periods where they've had revolutionary times. They've deposed governments, and they've done radical things. But if you look at what they've become, it seems like they all revert back into what they initially were formed to defeat.
Absolutely.
So why do you think that is?
Well, you have okay. Well, I think that really the problem becomes is that we have to find a way to understand that human beings are going to exert leadership qualities, but that doesn't necessarily mean that we should make them our leaders and give them permission and authority to rule over other people. And I think that's what the problem tends to be. You know, we have these idealized versions of radical figures and revolutionaries throughout history that people look to, and we idolize them and create this image of some radical person that is going to come along and round everybody together and save the world, instead of just believing in the individual's ability and for, you know, us to have a number of leaders and people who can step up and lead the way whenever their skill their skill set is needed and important at that time. But what we end up having is people promote a message of change. They put themselves in power, or they claim power, whether by force or by the people supporting it. And then they end up becoming the government. You know, there's this idea of the dictatorship of the proletariat, which, you know, it's like, oh, the people are going to come along, we're going to overthrow the current state, and then we're going to install ourselves, and that'll be a temporary thing. They always say it's going to be a temporary thing, and it ends up becoming that those people want to keep their power, and so they clamp down hard, and they end up doing, like you said, often the same crimes and horrible things that they were fighting against. So I think it's just a fault of us as far as humanity has come this far, and in the past, people still tend to want to look to a leader. And like I said, there's nothing wrong with with leadership qualities. There are varying things that we all may do better than others, and there's nothing wrong with that. But we shouldn't allow that to taint our thinking into giving somebody full authority over other, you know, groups of people or human beings and things like that. Obviously, we can enter into voluntary contracts, but again, I think that the issue goes into the emotional level, the internal level. The reason the state is allowed to exist and do all the things it does is, for one, we understand, and obviously here on the Anti-Media Radio, people understand the manipulation that's done by the mainstream media and by these, you know, these institutions, but it's also done through the education system and just through propaganda put out at the government. Is, again, they play off of these deeper issues, these mommy and daddy issues that we have in various ways in a large portion of our society. And so people look for somebody to be that parent figure and to make all the decisions for them, to make life easier. Because, you know, one thing about anarchy is it's not promising to be easy. It's promising that, you know, you're going to take responsibility for your own actions and, you know, for who you are and claiming that ability, you know. So it's not saying, oh, I give up, I'm going to let somebody else rule over me. That's the easy way out, really, is to say that I'd rather have the government do my thinking for me and to make all my big decisions for me. And whenever I'm in trouble or need something, I'm going to look towards the government and expect the government to do it. That's somebody who has an issue there that, again, is just trying to fill that void. And the government's perfectly happy to play that role for people and to be this big brother, big sister, big father, parent figure. And that's just play, again, that's what I think is probably the same symptom that gets us wanting a leader, whether it's the false ideal of a revolutionary leader being the one, the chosen one that's going to make things better or whatever, or this idea that, oh, we've got this government institution and it may be responsible for doing a lot of bad, but we can sometimes bend it to our will and make it and use it for good things. It's a false premise. The government, using the government is not going to end up well.
Yeah, exactly.
Derek, I had a question. This is DB. How do you prevent the government from just using unmitigated violence against you when you're trying to effect change? Because that's where they kind of got us right now.
You know, and these are important, valid conversations that people who are considering real effective change, nonviolent, peaceful resistance, noncompliance, and, you know, evolutionary change. Because as Nick pointed out earlier, that, you know, revolutions, they tend to, you know, it's there in the word. It's a revolution. You go in circles. A good friend of mine told me that, you know, and that's why it's important that we need to have an evolution. We need to evolve and move forward and stop going in circles. And, you know, one of the things that we are going to have to do if we're going to be able to do that and to evolve and move forward is, so we have to form communities of like-minded individuals and come together and think of ways to defend ourselves as communities, right? But essentially what we're dealing with is the state is basically the biggest gang in the landmass that we are living on, you know, whether that's broken down by states or just what we consider to be the United States. That landmass, there is a gang of people that have spent several hundred years propagandizing people into thinking that their power is legitimate and that their armies and their police and their institutions are the only, you know, that they can maintain a monopoly on force and violence, right? But if anybody else does the things they do, it's theft, it's a murder, and you go to prison. But if you were with the government, then it's perfectly legal, right? So we have to create a competition instead of trying to fight them head on and take them on, you know, with our pitchforks, which obviously doesn't usually end very well. And especially, like you said, they've got they can use force and violence on us, and we've seen this happen already. So we don't want to try that method. I think that's already been tried plenty of times, and you can listen to great thinkers, you know, American Indian activist John Trudell has said this plenty of times, that they've tried to fight them. They've tried to fight them for 500 years, this institution, what he calls the predator class, and they've killed countless people. You know, we can't win that way. And ultimately, it may come that way if the government chooses to use force, but that's not the change we're seeking. So what do we do then? What are our options left instead? If we, as we said earlier, we don't want to vote our way out of this, and even if we believed we could vote our way out of it, the best luck you have is locally. It doesn't matter who they put in for president. It doesn't matter. Like, I mean, at this point, we just got to be real. It doesn't matter. It has no, like, you know, as far as a puppet up there, yeah, the skin color, the face, the sex may change, but it's going to be the same policies, the same crap that we've seen year after year. So give that up. It doesn't matter. You're not going to win that way. Maybe again locally, but for the most part, move past political solutions and move past the idea of a violent solution. A violent insurrection isn't going to work. There's, you know, even if you thought that was your solution, the numbers aren't there for you. I'm sorry, but you will be massacred. So what are our other options? Then, as I said, we have to build a competition. So we create alternative institutions to the government. And, you know, we could talk about that for a while if we wanted to. But, you know, to answer your question, we're building these alternative institutions. We're creating homeschooling and unschooling programs. We're creating alternative currencies and community gardens and community networks and community defense efforts and cop watching, all these institutions. And eventually the state starts to recognize, holy crap, there are pockets of these areas popping up all around the United States. These people are, you know, becoming more sustainable. They're moving off of our grid. They're starting to use technologies to work together, et cetera, et cetera. At some point, it is realistic to think that they might become the aggressor and decide they want to go shut down one of these communities. Let's say we could call it Waco or something like that, you know. It could end up in that situation, you know, and that's, I think, the fear of plenty of people who discuss these things, who want to become more off-grid, who want to become sustainable, who believe in agorism and want to be around like-minded people. Let's just go get our plot of land, right, and let's start our community. And what happens when that community starts protecting itself? Like, right, you stockpile some weapons because it's necessary, right? You want to be protected, and it, just like it's everyone's right to own a weapon. So you put some weapons on your land, you're growing your own food, you're educating your children the way that you think they should be educated outside of the state. How long is it before they start broadcasting you on the news saying there's some cult down, you know, the block just outside of town, and you have all your neighbors calling for the police to come and invade there? I mean, these are realistic situations. I think we can speculate and we can, you know, theorize on how this will play out. But ultimately, I think it's more important for us to build and create at this point. You know, like Nick said, it's 2015. People are awakening to the idea of the police state. People are seeing a lot of the institutions. They're looking past political problems, the political solutions. We have to create now. Now it's time to focus on which ways we can apply technology to create new apps that allow us to connect to each other in new ways, and to create exchanges outside of the purview of the government. I mean, we have to create new ways for us to come together. And it sounds weird that we have to use technology to do that, but it is an interesting aspect of that. We're going to use technology, as long as it stays open source, decentralized, and in the hands of the people, we're going to use technology to help free the people. And, you know, that's what we really need to focus on, is not only the technology, but just building, connecting to our communities. And again, going back to the ideas that are presented in the book that me and John are writing, I also think along with these solutions, this creating and building in the physical world, that we have to, again, choose to take a path towards working on our own internal tyrants, if I can say it that way, because I think that that's really what it is. It's, we have this internal thing we need to work on just as much as the physical world, you know. And if we come from that place of balanced human beings trying to pursue freedom, and we start to get past these barriers that have all been propped up and created for us, then I think, you know, we're going to have a lot more of a likelihood of us cooperating together, forming new alliances, and being a more formative threat against any type of state institution, where all of a sudden they're like, oh crap, they're working together. Look at them. They're organizing. They're not buying into division anymore. They're not looking at their skin color anymore. They're not looking at these political parties anymore. They're actually working together. You know, think about how much that would scare the state to see people stop fighting over the BS and like the ego and all this crap, and to get towards creating solutions.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and it, to me, the internet is providing a very demonopolizing effect to the media, and I think that will definitely play into the hands of the revolutionaries, the evolutionaries. And I really appreciate what you said there, because you're right, man. A revolution just means going around one time, and you're going in a circle. And so revolution, even by the language of it, you're predetermining yourself to end up back in the same situation you're in a couple hundred years, 100 years later, a couple hundred years later. I know Mexico has a reputation of having a revolution once every 100 years. Egypt has had 3 in the past 5, and you know, the U.S. has one once every, I don't know, 300. But you know, you're right, man, and that's a great point. But I think that also we need to. You know, keep in mind, back to what like DB was saying first when he asked you about, you know, what happens with violence, because we had Justin King on the program on Monday night, and we kind of talked about this, and we also brought up the 43 students that disappeared in Mexico and the effect that that has had down in Mexico, and how the, all of this stuff kind of ties in. Because I think that if we successfully, as you were saying, Derek, use this technology to our advantage, and we're able to successfully demonopolize the media, and if there was a situation, like for instance, let's just say a Boston massacre type of situation, or a disappearance of 43 students type of situation, where the state did end up trying to use a mass form of violence against people, and create a bunch of martyrs. But that's exactly what it does. If we're able to get a grip on what's going on in the media, and we're able to help, you know, push the narrative forward, I think that when the state uses violence, especially now, I think it's anything that comes next, as far as if three or four people get shot by the cops or something like that happens, I mean, it's going to be a very martyr-like situation where it's going to end up catalyzing a lot more blowback than what these guys want, you know, and that's exactly what's going on in Mexico. I mean, look at the amount of public outcry protests that's still going on in Mexico over these students that have were kidnapped by the, you know, by the state. So I think that it, in a way, I mean, it could play a role, but I think we have to be really prepared for that. But the other thing is that, as you were mentioning, the ideas have to be there. We need to go past this idea that we have right now, where we can just we can trust other people to like run our lives. We have to move to a much more decentralized type of nervous system for the society to work correctly. Otherwise, we're going to keep having these same cycles where tyrants end up aggregating all of the power, and even if they're popularly elected, even if they're supported by the people, I mean, it's a very Machiavellian concept. You know, people can get elected by a wide majority and they can be a very popular person, but then at the same time, they could be like Caesar and assume all the power. And it just happens over and over. So I think the ideas have to get more evolved. And I think your book, and that's why I'm so excited about the Conscious Resistance, about you guys' book, because I think that this is going to be a major stepping stone in moving us forward into these next steps, because I don't think, you know, I think we're still a few years off before we can really talk about having widespread, you know, massive social change and stuff. You know, it's a work in progress. We're not going to have it overnight. And I think your book is going to be the next, you know, step as we're going to really move all of these ideas forward and all that.
Yeah, man, me and John, I know he would say as much as I do that I definitely appreciate that, man, because that's really, it's something, that's why we're giving it away for free. I don't know if I mentioned that part, but the book is going to be given away for free because we just think that the ideas are that important and we're not really worried about trying to make money off of it. We just, you know, we're holding a crowdfunding campaign right now. If anybody's interested in contributing to that, that'll go towards the editing and then the printing cost. And you can find all this info, of course, is at theconsciousresistance.com/book. Or just go to theconsciousresistance.com, which is the home for the Conscious Resistance Network, a bunch of other people, including myself, who do content related to these topics that we've been talking about. And you can find more info about the book, including the art that we chose. And one of the covers for the book was actually done by Scott from Anti-Media, of course. And yeah, we're really excited to get this out there. Like I said, it's going to be for free. We're going to release it officially in April at the Free Your Mind Conference in Philadelphia. And then after that, on the website, you'll be able to order it. And all you'll have to do is just pay for shipping. But the book itself will be for free. And yeah, and we really hope that it can bridge these worlds, because I understand that there are definitely, you know, obviously logic is a valuable thing, and we need to use logic in our thinking. And that's how we can help people understand that the government is not the best solution, especially the current government that we have and the institutions that we understand them to be are not the most logical solutions, and we can move past them. We can evolve, and we understand that. And so we want to reach out to those who are of this materialist worldview, who are strictly logical, strictly rational, and understand freedom in the philosophical sense, and help them come to the other side of understanding things on a spiritual sense. And, you know, that word spiritual gets tossed around a lot. And in the book itself, we define several key terms. We define what we mean when we say freedom, what we mean when we say spirituality, what we mean when we say anarchy and consciousness, and terms that we use a lot in the book. They all get defined very clearly for you to understand what point we're coming from, so that we can actually have a conversation and be speaking on the same level. But essentially, we're reaching out to those who understand freedom in the philosophical sense and trying to get them to be more in touch with a possibly more intuitive path, and a path of self-reflection, and get them to see that there is value in that. And at the same time, reach out to those who are already more spiritually aware, consciousness aware, and pursuing knowledge in that area, to understand the value of pursuing freedom in the philosophical sense. Because what we found sometimes is those who are into meditation, or even like quote unquote new age, I know that term gets used in a lot of negative and whatever ways, but whatever you think about that term, you know, new age, people, sometimes they want to meditate or have a sense of spirituality, and they don't want to have any concerns for what's going on in the physical world. In fact, they might tell you that, you know, you're bringing them down, or that you're creating negative things by talking about the negative things. And I do think there's something to be said for manifestation and the power of our word, but also we can't choose to be ignorant, you know. So we're not calling for people to disassociate and to be ignorant, but rather to have a more balanced view of themselves. Because, I mean, if you think about this, especially for people like us who are just full-time in this type of information, whether it's writing articles, doing podcasts and radio shows, you know, it can be very overwhelming. And I find, for me, trying to find 5 to 10, 15 minutes to go on a walk in nature, or some time to meditate, or, you know, before I go to bed, I like to do like a laying down meditation, reflect on my day and everything. And even doing that 5 minutes in our busy lives can have profound effects on yourself and the way you understand yourself, and all kinds of things can come to the surface, things that you maybe never even knew were there, and you can begin that process of healing. And that, I think, is one of the biggest steps towards us really understanding freedom. And then at the same time, when people say that calling for anarchy is idealistic or it's a utopian vision, I can understand that in one sense, but I'm not saying that we're going to create anarchy today, right now in this moment, from the state of mind that we're in. As I said earlier, a revolution without healing is a recipe for disaster. These are things that are going to happen only once we choose to take these steps and begin working on ourselves internally, as well as educating ourselves about the problems in the world. So we're saying it's important for you to know that intuitive spiritual side of yourself, but not to disassociate. Because I think what we find sometimes in these new age circles, people who believe that, like, either the aliens are going to come back and save us, or a certain, like, spirit that they're channeling is going to take care of things, or if you talk about the negative things, then they're going to win, so we should only just talk about positive things and put out that mentality. I think that a lot of that is really lacking responsibility, again, and that's one of the biggest problems in our society, people not taking personal responsibility for their decisions and their actions. But that's also just ignoring the fact. So we don't want to empower them through fear and being paralyzed, but we also want to empower ourselves through education and then again through action. And that's where agorism, anarchy in action, comes in there. Is, you know, you understand yourself, you understand what freedom means to you, you see the problems, you create solutions, and then you take the steps to make them happen.
Yeah.
So we're going to jump into this article next, unless anybody wants to ask Derek a question about the book or anything he was just talking about. So we also
I'm still blown away about all that info. I mean, that was amazing.
That's why everyone should support the book. We dropped the crowdfunding campaign in the chat room. Anybody that likes the ideas that Derek was talking about can support the book. Like he was saying, once the book is out, it's going to be free. So this is just, you know, it's all about getting the information out there. And
I got one question. What do you think, and this is just totally off the top of my head, what do you think about we have drones in the air that respond to where the police go and film everything they do?
That is a solution? What do I think about that as a solution? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, I mean, is that a feasible thing we could have funded, you know?
I mean, I would say, for one, that I'm not against the use of drones personally. Obviously, I'm against the use of drones, Reaper drones, and drones killing people. But as far as the use of – we noticed recently, right, that they rule against people. They want to try to regulate the use of civilian drones. But I personally think that we should all have access to drones, and maybe – the idea of a cop watching drone, and say every community had a drone that they could, you know, whenever there was protests and stuff, we hover our own drones over the police to make sure we get them all on camera. I mean, I think that's a great solution. And that's another beautiful way that we can use the technology, again, because it's just a tool. It's all about the way we apply it. We can use that technology to shine a light back on them.
So we got this article, and I think the point I want to make here before we jump into it is why we want to support a lot of these ideas that Derek was just talking about, is because of what could possibly happen if we don't. And, you know, me and DB have talked about this multiple times on the show, and, you know, it's activism and, you know, information, truth, and it's all important. But we have to keep in mind that we're on a time scale too, because a lot of these really terrible ideas are coming to fruition. And it's only a matter of time, and there could be a certain point in time where it could be too late. And that's why I think it's really important that we start really implementing a lot of these ideas this year as soon as possible. Because ideas like weaponization of the weather could become a reality. If it's not already happening, it could become a reality in the very, very near future. In fact, we have Professor Alan Robach from Rutgers University. He basically came out and was saying, like, hey, I'm worried that maybe the CIA is going to be using a lot of this climate science and a lot of this climate technology as a weapon to attack foreign countries or attack anybody that they want. You know, and Derek, you wrote a really good article about it on the anti-media. It came out 2 days ago on the 16th. But this is a big, huge issue that I know a lot of people have concerns about, you know, which is geoengineering, and it's a huge topic, and there's a lot of people that are concerned about it, but there's also a lot of demonization of anybody that talks about it. But the dynamic for me that's coming out is that now we're starting to see a lot of more corporate media, mainstream media coverage about geoengineering. There was a recent report about how they're starting to try to use drones to spray, you know, silver iodide into the atmosphere. That was on, that was like an official report. And there's a lot of geoengineering news that's coming out right now. And it kind of seems like they're getting ready to start, you know, talking about, okay, yes, we've been working on this stuff. So what do you think? We only have about 3.5 minutes left. But what do you think about this, first the article that you did about the CIA and how they could weaponize it, and then the overall topic of geoengineering?
Yeah, sure. Thanks, man. So yeah, the topic is huge, as you stated, and I hope that everybody's listening will read the article and then read some of the follow the links that I linked to in the article itself, and some of the documents that I referenced, so you can find out more about the history of weather modification programs, which have been going on for at least the last 100 years. And there's some great pieces of information out there that document the earliest attempts. But Professor Robach was discussing this at the American Association for the Advancement of Science recently in San Jose, California. And what he said is that he was called by two men who said they were from the CIA, and they were asking whether it was possible for hostile governments to use geoengineering, which is the mass manipulation of the weather, against the United States. And this is what he said specifically. This is a quote from him. He said, "I got a phone call from two men who said, we work as consultants for the CIA, and we'd like to know if some other country was controlling our climate, would we know about it?" And he goes on to say, "I'd learned lots of other things that the CIA had done that haven't followed the rules, and I thought that wasn't how I wanted my tax money spent. I think this research has to be out open and in international, so there isn't any question of if it is being used for hostile purposes." And so he's basically alluding to the possibility that governments could be using these against each other. And I point to two different documents here that you should check out. One is from 1996 by the U.S. Air Force, entitled "Weather is a Force Multiplier, Owning the Weather by 2025. And the government, the military, discusses how they could use weather as a war weapon against other countries. And there's also the Environmental Modification Treaty, which was signed by global governments, including the United States, declaring that they wouldn't use weather modification tools against each other. So for one first thing to take away from this is that weather modification exists. There's no doubt about that. That is not a conspiracy in any way. A lot of times this topic gets mixed up into chemtrails, and I guess that's the name for it, but I really hate that term, because it's just like most things, it's a derogatory way people refer to the topic. But the science is geoengineering, and the only question of conspiracy is whether or not these programs that they discuss openly are in the research phase or if they're already happening. And as I say in this article, it's completely plausible to think that the government might do these things without telling people. For one, they've used weather modification during the Vietnam War, and it's possible they are still using it now.
Derek, thanks for calling in. It was a pleasure having you on. We'll have you on soon. Thank you guys for tuning in to the Anti-Media Radio. See you tomorrow. 5 days a week.
Right. Buenas noches.
Peace.
I'ma let them know, no, through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.